Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex. Welcome back to On Air with Dan and Alex, now streaming on all platforms in the top 1.5%. Globally, in the category all podcasts, we are really climbing those ranks, and we couldn't do it without you. Thank you for that. Hey, Dan.
Whoa. Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Hi, Alex. How's it going?
All is good. How have you been?
I'm good. I'm excited for a Q&A episode today. We are doing full-on Q&A, answering everything from personal questions to am I the a-holes to other random questions. So yeah, we're very excited about that.
I think we should get stuck in. We received a bunch of questions and also scenarios, including the famous one that's come from Reddit, the idea, the am I the a-hole in this scenario. Many of you concerned if indeed you are the a-hole in that scenario. And luckily for you guys, you've got Dan and I here to tell you whether you are or not. So we should definitely kick things off quickly. I'll start with some questions that have come in via Instagram. This one is from Chris. He says, great work on the podcast. As someone who is lucky enough to travel globally on business, it's great to hear some many relatable stories and topics. He says, a question for the Q&A. How do you both feel about airport security at the gate? I personally don't like it, given airport security is so poorly executed in so many countries, even when traveling on business. I like to relax in the lounge at the terminal after the stress of security, not before it. I give Kuala Lumpur as an example of security at the gate that can be awful. No organization, no premium line, and you must leave the lounge way before, for example, a busy Emirates flight because of this. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this aviation abomination. Chris describes it as, what do you think?
I have very mixed feelings. So I want to hear first, like, do you also have mixed feelings about it, or are you very against, or?
I hate it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You hate it. Then I can give my arguments that I think it can be good sometimes, just to be a bit of a counterforce. So the reason I enjoy it in some places is that it makes the journey to me much less stressful, because I'm thinking of Singapore Changi, which is obviously, I mean, ranked over and over again the best airport in the world, and they do security at the gate at every single gate. And then you think that's annoying. Well, if you arrive at the airport, you check in, and then you clear passport control, it all feels so leisurely because there's never a line for passport control. It's automated for most nationalities. So you just breeze through, then the airport is stunning. It's
before, like a mall. I don't want to interrupt your flow, okay? But I can imagine there's a lot of listeners right now thinking, there is never a queue for passport control. You just breeze through. I'm like, yeah, well, Dan, are saying that as a European passport holder, there are a lot of different passports that require you to be in an awfully long queue, not least the Brexit one, the British one.
No.
I'm not just talking about elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I specifically at Changi, I'm not saying this is at other airports, but most nationalities can use those. And if they don't, there's never almost a line for the agents. So there, I feel like it's very leisurely because you don't have to stand in any lines with tons of people after check-in. And there's so many different stations to clear immigration that then you go through. And when you get to security for your flight, at least it's only your flight. So the benefit there is that, firstly, it's usually not as many people as at a general security checkpoint. Secondly, yeah. you don't have to stress about missing your flight. That's the thing I love, because when you're standing there surrounded by other people specifically taking your exact flight, you don't have to be like, oh my God, this line is so long. Should I ask to skip? Situation I've been in this year in Kuala Lumpur, for example.
Remember?
Yeah. So that I think is a huge benefit. I don't like once you're past that point, and I mean, to me, it's crazy that some airports put you behind that, and then there's no toilets or anything to drink. That's crazy. But again, if you're going to do it like Singapore Changi, where they have toilets at each gate. And wait, do they have toilets at each gate? Now I'm getting confused, but I know they have water stations. But some airports like Bangkok, never mind, they don't have security there, but they have so there's a difference, because to me there's not a big I don't distinguish that much between having to clear security at the gate versus those gates where you still have to pass through and then you're held for however long, if you know what I mean. So in Bangkok you still have to scan your boarding pass, and then you might have to sit in a hold area for 30 minutes, which becomes equivalent to the airports that have security at the gate. That's maybe the worst in both worlds.
I take a different stance on this completely. I think I agree with Chris, who wrote in with the question. I think it is stressful. I cannot relax in a lounge with the thought buzzing about in my head, the security queue might be really long, even for priority, even for One World Emerald, even for whatever. There might be no priority. It might be one security queue. The security queue might be double long. Can you imagine if it's an A380 that's boarding next to us? The security queue is going to be really long. Blah, blah, blah.
No,
and
but
I just, I can't. Yes, you're saying it's per gate,
yeah,
right?
It the has security to be per gate. Flight. Even that.
What if it's, for me, 20 people in front of me, that's a long queue. And that's only 20.
Wow, your privilege is showing.
No, I'm just saying in general, I think aviation has advanced in such a way that we are thankful and lucky to not have to queue as we used to. I'm talking about in all cabin classes. You know, you rock up now for an economy flight with British Airways from Terminal 5. You don't queue with 20 people in front of you. Sometimes you just go straight to the kiosk, right? So I don't like the idea of the prospect of the size of the queue ultimately running wild in my head while I'm trying to so-called chill in a lounge. I also don't like how it affects my time management. Half of me wants to be relaxed and says, don't worry, you're going to be fine. You've got One World Emerald and your priority, and so you're good. Then I remember I'm flying Star Alliance, and then I'm like, what now? You know? Or I just think that if I go on the relaxed side of things, you know, on one side of me is the relaxed side. Then the other shoulder, you've got the little voice in my ear saying, you can be relaxed, but you're probably going to miss this flight. And I'm like, you know what? Pack up your stuff. Unplug that. Let's go. Come on. We're going to the gate. We can chill at the gate, as if that's possible to chill in those chairs. So I just think generally it's stressful. I much prefer knowing that the moment you have cleared security, you've done all the hurdles. For the same reason, I hate the immigration that is before certain gates as a result of, for example, Schengen, non-Schengen, for example, in Europe or things like that. So hate that. We you know that I grew up back and forth every weekend going to the south of Spain, and to leave to fly all of the UK flights are after immigration, obviously, because they're not in Schengen. And so you clear security, then you have a choice. You can chill in the lounge, chill where the shops and restaurants are and whatever. Or you can play it on the safe side, join the queue for immigration, go through. But once you are through, congratulations, you've reached no man's land. There is nothing other than your gate.
Yeah.
And the aircraft hasn't even arrived yet it says boarding on the screen, right? So what do you do? The amount of times I've been in that scenario where, for example, I'm telling family that I'm with, it says boarding, but we're not boarding, so we don't have to go to immigration yet. And then they're staring at me like, how can you be sure? Well, I am sure because the aircraft is here. Yeah, but what if they board everyone by making them pass through the gate, but they're holding everyone on the ramp, the holding pen between the gate and the aircraft, the jet bridge? I'm like, oh God, you know what? You're right. So we now have to go to immigration. And you join immigration and the queue can be so long. And then there's people that had no idea they were going through immigration. So they go to the front of the queue because they say, we're about to miss our flight to Heathrow. I'm like, sweetheart, we're also going to Heathrow. So join the queue.
Okay.
It's horrible.
I think it seems like the moral of this great nuanced discussion is that it depends on so many factors. And it, I don't think personally that it always has to be awful. I think at some airports it works, but yeah, very interesting question. I like that. What's next?
That's good. So next question we have is from... let's just bring it up. Sarah, she says, hey, I sent your podcast rant about the Air Canada 787 windows to my dad. For context, anyone who hasn't listened to that episode, go back a few weeks. It was an issue that I had on an Air Canada flight from London to Montreal that departed nice in the afternoon, 2 p.m., super civilized, very daylight, very demure, very mindful. And when we departed, they did something that wasn't demure or mindful at all. They forced our windows into full darkness and put the cabin also into full darkness. And I wasn't having it. And I said, hi, can you kindly unlock my window? Because they locked them. Can you unlock the 787 dimmable window so that I can brighten it, please? He said, oh, but it's going to get bright. I said, yep, that's the whole point. Oh, but it's going to get bright. Yep, that's the whole point. And we went back and forth. You can listen to it in the episode. Anyway, in the end, he did unlock it, but I really had to stand my ground. I put this on Twitter. It went viral. It blew up. It's on a million views. People had opinions on it. I'd say 70 to 80% of people were saying you are absolutely able to, on a 2 p.m. flight that gets in at 4 p.m., have your window on a bright setting on a 787. The other 20% thought I was abhorrent, thought it was just, you know, this is the nature of social media, right? Love and hate, right?
They agree with me. That's good to know.
Yeah, well, anyway, the good thing is that Sarah and her father don't agree with you because, and of course you do agree with me. So put that on the record, please. Thank you. So she says, I sent your podcast rant about the 787 windows to my dad, and I'm now getting live updates from his flight in business class from Toronto to Las Vegas. Apparently, the Air Canada flight attendants are not happy with him either, she says, right? So then there's a screenshot, and her father is emailing her, and he says, 787 from Toronto to Vegas today. They darkened and locked the windows after takeoff. So I asked for mine to be unlocked so I could brighten it, which they have now done, and so have I. Then it's followed by an email, and he says, 30 minutes later, I am the only bright window. And then about 3 hours later, he emails her, just started our descent. I remain the only bright window. And now the reason he's put in the subject line, for your amusement. Of course, he heard the episode that we had discussed it. But also, it's this thing of, you are entitled to it. It isn't intrusive, especially not on a sociable daytime flight. The design of that cabin means that the seat shell kind of blocks the light from going to the next person as well, which is quite nice. And you are within your rights. And it's just a shame that there would have been loads of other passengers that potentially could have tried to brighten their window, but thought, oh, it doesn't work. Oh, it's locked for some reason. Not knowing that this is an active decision that a crew member has taken. We really liked it. I love the screenshot of the email. I love the, I loved the receipts. Sarah and her father, Blair, thank you very much for being part of the movement with the 787 windows, the on-air movement, and also for Air Canada. I hope Air Canada get the message loud and clear now. You know, you piss off one of the on-air podcast hosts with these locked dark windows, the rest will follow in the revolution against. So yeah, it's good. Thank you for writing in.
Yeah, wow. Love that. Here's a question from Joshua. I was just reading it and I was like, that's why it didn't sound like I loved it, because this is horrible. He said, I made the silly mistake of connecting through Heathrow with British Airways 9 days ago. I haven't seen my bag since. Curious to hear what you think is the best airline and airport to connect through in Europe. Well.
Oh, God. We've spoken about all the time, don't you?
But yeah, and it's happened to me too. But we've spoken about what we think are the best airports already in Europe in a previous episode. Yeah. But specifically for luggage, smaller is better, and avoiding Heathrow and Charles de Gaulle will be your best bets. Frankfurt to some extent too.
Yeah,
Madrid. I mean, just Copenhagen, Helsinki. On a reasonable length connection, those are
Munich,
good places.
Munich, if it has to be, if it has to be Germany.
If you're not changing terminals, which unfortunately you have to do in Munich
and
sometimes.
And if you're not changing airlines as well.
Exactly. So small airports are always the way to go, but yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I know someone who had like a 6-hour connection with Air France and somehow their bag still didn't make it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I hear it all the time. All the time. I got a message from Danielle. She messaged me, and I'll paraphrase because it was a pretty long message where she was asking for that advice. But she had messaged with deep concern that her flight on a British Airways scheduled short-haul service from Turkey to the UK was swapped with around 2 weeks to go to the wet lease operator that British Airways are currently using, Danish Air Transport, I think is the full name.
You
DAT,
know how we refer
D-A-T.
To it. Yeah. What
DAT,
is DAT?
Yeah, DAT. DATing. What is DAT? Anyway, so this airline, DAT, is what BA are using. And she said to me she's a nervous flyer and she's read the reviews and it says that the aircraft is old and tatty. And she said to me, I chose to fly BA. I am nervous and I'm not nervous with BA. She said to me that she trusts BA pilots and by the way, you know, when a passenger is nervous, there are a whole bunch of things that might not be 100% rational or logical, whatever, but if it makes them feel all right, then we must respect that. And I always think it's something to be respected. People know what they want, especially nervous passengers. They know, and if that enables them to get from A to B, then great. You know, if they only want to fly, for example, on an aircraft that is an Airbus aircraft, and they know that Boeing aircraft are safe, but it just makes them feel better, leave them be, I say, because we don't want anything stopping anyone from being able to do what they want to do, to make the trip they wanted to make, see the relative and so on. So she says to me, she was really upset to discover that it was this swap and she didn't know what to do. I have already been in touch with her. I told her, call British Airways. They have a policy that if the flight is not operated by BA and has been swapped to the wet lease operator DAT, then they will move you onto a British Airways flight free of charge, nearest available date, time, and so on. She did that with quite a bit of anxiety and anticipation that they were basically going to say, no, it's not possible. You booked it. We're too close, blah, blah, blah. They changed it very easily. So we have a full round circle moment. We don't need to wait for the answer. She has been rebooked onto a British Airways operated flight. She's feeling much more positive about it now. And I would say that is a good decision by the airline to not force passengers into something that they don't want and make it difficult for them and add to their anxiety and stress. Just transfer them onto one of your flights because they booked to fly with you, not with DAT.
Exactly. I agree. So here's a question from Caleb. He says, love the podcast with you and Alex. It makes my commute so much more enjoyable. Thank you, Caleb. Can you explain what code sharing is? Why do airlines code share? Does it produce some sort of operational or financial benefit for the partner airline? As a customer, it seems odd to market a ticket as one airline with a caveat of being operated by. Let me know your thoughts.
What are your thoughts?
No, you go first.
Okay, code sharing definitely is something that airlines are able to make money. It is a practice where pretty much two, but sometimes in many scenarios, way more than two airlines come to an agreement where they can sell seats on each other's flight, right? And so while one airline is operating, they can partner up with other airlines and they'll also sell seats on that flight. And what it does is it boosts the potential load factor, so the number of people on that flight, but also it expands the reach of that airline into markets perhaps that the airline doesn't fly to. It's a bit like an alliance. And these days, the relevance of and the importance of alliances are widely being questioned because of how airlines are able to strike their own deals with code sharing and partnering up with who they want to benefit by, as I said, expanding their network, their reach, streamlining connections, being able to offer passengers a greater access to different destinations and so on. So if you book an American Airlines flight and it's operated by BA, ultimately those two airlines can pool the resources they have together to both benefit financially, but also to offer services that otherwise either party wouldn't be able to offer without such a partnership. So that's the side from the airline as to why code sharing works and why it's really come into fruition and center stage over recent years. As I say, now it's almost as strong as just being in an alliance. Sometimes it's even stronger.
Yeah. It's a very valuable tool that airlines have, and especially airlines that have a fleet shortage, which we're seeing all over the industry right now. This is, a very handy tool to be able to get passengers where you want to get them. Let's see what else. A question. Okay, This is fun. Andrew asks, why did you call it on air instead of something else like in flight with Alex and Dan?
Well, I think very easily we called it on air because of the play on like the double entendre, right? So exactly. On air as in the media side, like we're on air every week, every Wednesday, but also you'll regularly find Dan and I, you know, on air, in the air, yeah, flying, you know, airborne.
Yeah, I really love, I think any good name I've realized takes a while to find. Like we were discussing the name for probably 6 months until we were like...
We had quite a few options, didn't we? Do you want to share what some of the options were?
I frankly don't remember, but if you have
One of them was like, we would say like the lounge with Dan and Alex, or, you know, like at the gate, or... Yeah. Now boarding or final call, or, and I was like,
the lounge
I think we should launch a separate side podcast, the lounge, where we make it super casual. We invite five different people to the lounge, and there's definitely opportunity with the lounge. In fact, Emmy, who has widely become a friend of the podcast, I mean, she's one of my closest friends who I went to school with, but we reference her quite a lot. In fact, we've referenced her so much that someone tried to add her on her private Instagram the other day. And she messaged me, who is this person? Turns out it's a listener. So
leave Emmy alone.
Emmy said to me that she said, it's so great that now people of the podcast know me. She said, because you've mentioned me so much. And I said, yeah. And then, of course, I realized I've just created a monster, because she said to me, right, I need fan names. She said, for example, Taylor Swift has Swifties, Justin Bieber has Beliebers. What am I going to be called? I said to her, whoa, sit down. She said, and then I think I should launch a side podcast, a podcast that is the after show to the main event, she said. So people tune in to On Air with Dan and Alex, and then they come to Emmy for this, like, afterthought discussion, the likes you would get on TV with the after show, with behind the scenes exclusives and special guests to discuss everything they've heard. I said to her, dear Lord, I have created a monster. And she said to me, yes. Why was I mentioning Emmy? I've forgotten.
I don't know. Emmy should start the lounge.
Right. Oh, anyway. So you know what she said? There you go. You just reminded me. You know what she said? She said she's going to call the podcast The Lounge with Emmy.
She said that?
Yes.
Oh my God, love it.
Without knowing that it was potentially one of the names for On Air. So there we go.
Well, so in conclusion, On Air has a double meaning, which is why we like it. It's related to aviation and also to streaming. So I have another question here from Dave. He says, I love the pod. I didn't so much love the pod. I think he used the wrong word. He said, I didn't so much love the flight. I was recently on with KLM. How
are you sure
it?
He didn't say, I didn't so much love the podcast?
No. Before. He says, I love the pod. Like was, I love the right. pod, but I didn't so much love the pod. I was recently in on KLM flight 606. Oh, so he's making a joke about being on a plane.
Right.
So he says, how is it in 2024 an airline's temperature is so erratic? It goes from too hot to too cold throughout the flight. My car can maintain a constant temperature. My house can maintain a constant temperature. Even my boat. What is the problem with aviation?
What a great question. I mean, there is always a challenge about the way in which airflow is introduced into the cabin, the rate that it is introduced, and how that can sometimes affect cabin temperature. Also, believe it or not, where you are flying and the outside air temperature, although it tends to be absolutely freezing almost everywhere, but given the altitude. But yeah, you're right. It is something that airline jets are not completely sophisticated in. And then you've got all the other parameters, like, you know, the use of the galley, the use of the ovens, whether or not it's a daytime flight or a nighttime flight, the number of air vents that are open in the cabin and how that will affect the overall temperature set by the cabin crew for that zone. Yeah, I'd say it's a bit different to your car because there's just so many different things that determine the final temperature. Plus the fact that airline jets are not incredibly sophisticated in the cabin in terms of maintaining that control of the temperature, especially, as I said, with things like the rate that new air is introduced into the cabin and so on, and all the other parameters I mentioned.
Yeah, very well said. I would say my biggest tip I always give is just to bring a USB fan. They're so cheap, so small and convenient, and they can really help cool you down. If it's the other way around and the aircraft is too cold, I'm always quite cold, so I relate to that more. Then you better, I've just learned to bring a sweater, but there was like a year there where I was constantly cold and I always wore shorts on flights because I was hopping around in Southeast Asia and I would end up sitting there shaking and regretting it. So
yeah, true. I remember that of you.
So I have one more question here and then you go with some of yours. This one is from Luca and I think this is a fun job. He's been working in hospital, or a fun question because it's related to a job. I've been working in hospitality for 6 years, but I want to move into aviation. I don't know how and what I could do, but I don't think I could be a steward. Are there any jobs in the field that come to your mind? I just have to say, immediately upon reading this question, I thought, go to the airport and hang out a bit. If you don't want to have a job that entails flying, but you still want to work in aviation, go there and you'll realize how many different jobs there are that you can do related to aviation, because there are hundreds of different ones.
Yeah. And across the aviation ecosystem, it stretches far and wide. Definitely. Yeah. You need to be able to consider a whole variety of different roles that most are behind the scenes, but play a really important part. But also there's loads of front facing, you know, customer first line roles as well, that are not just simply flying and cabin crew. So yeah, for sure, I would say I would agree with Dan. Just check out everything in the wider aviation ecosystem, including all of the front-facing roles, if that's something that you're after.
Alex, if you were to have any front-facing role at an airport, which one do you think you'd choose?
Ooh, maybe an ASM, maybe an airport station manager for an airline at that airport. If not working as the terminal lead for the entire terminal, then maybe just an ASM. Yeah, so airport station manager responsible for one airline's daily operation at that airport.
Cool. I think maybe I would do a ticketing. I mean, many airports don't have it anymore, but if you're going to be like someone who does ticketing, I think that would be kind of fun, because obviously you would deal with a lot of upset passengers who are coming because their flight has been canceled and they need to be rebooked. But having the fun and the freedom of being able to find the most creative solution to people's problems when you're already so in aviation, so you're kind of like, you know, a lot of things that maybe a lot of inexperienced people who are working at airports don't know. I think it would be so fun to try to, you know, it would be like maths almost, trying to figure things out for people.
Very true. Very, very true. Okay. I have a question here from Stephen. He says, hello. And I asked this question to Dan months ago, to which he replied, great question, I'll add it to the list. Yet months later, still nothing. He says, just like your first class video with Dan, missing in action. Stephen, I'm with you and I'm about to, you know what? We're going to save that question for in 5 minutes time. I'm going to ask him, let him start to formulate his answer. But Stephen says, what do you think about allowing pets, dogs especially, in the cabin? My wife brought our dog to the US all the way from Indonesia, and the poor girl had to spend 30 hours inside a crate. She was fine, but do you guys think that more airlines should allow dogs, not only service dogs, in the cabin. Presumably the reason dogs aren't allowed in the cabin is so they don't disturb other passengers. But in my experience, a crying baby or a poorly behaved child causes a lot more chaos than a dog. Discuss.
I just on this point very quickly, I have to say, I was just in a certain very, very exclusive lounge in Europe, and everyone there is extremely rich. So this woman comes walking in, extremely elegant, older woman, gray hair, looks pristine, with two, this is at the airport, past security and everything, with two poodles that are also perfectly manicured. So I was like, okay, so apparently this airline or whatever she's about to do, clearly these dogs are coming along. So, you know, that's interesting that I actually didn't ask what was going on, but I've never seen a dog that size in a premium cabin. So I
think the answer to this depends on whether or not you are a dog person or a dog lover, right? Because my idea of boarding an aircraft and instead of a passenger, something like a golden retriever being sat next to me is the idea of a dream flight. I mean,
so true.
I would pay to sit next to somebody's well-behaved, even a little bit well-behaved dog, right?
People pay because, to go to dog cafes all the time.
Yeah. So in so many scenarios, dogs prove to us that they are just so much better than human beings in so many different areas. And so as a result, I'm like, yeah, airlines should, you know, at the same time, I get we can't board aircraft where we're going to have even one barking dog the whole way. It is different to a crying baby. A baby is a baby, a human, you know, and a dog is an animal, even though they are our brothers and sisters and our kids and whatever, you know. So, yeah, I get torn on this kind of scenario because with the right, you know, temperament of dogs in the cabin, I'm like, sign me up. I will pay more, right?
Yeah.
to fly with them. But they're not, for example, I imagine, you know, someone's rowdy dog that's aggressive or smelly or something being nearby. That would be completely inappropriate. Then again, we get aggressive and rowdy smelly and smelly passengers, right?
Smelly is the most, you know, common in my
right?
experience.
So, you know, why do we not extend? Why is that acceptable when it's not for dogs? At least dogs, you know, we can bribe them with a treat. Try dangling a pretzel in front of a... Well, no, that'll probably work in some cases as well.
I didn't even consider your idea about booking a separate seat for a dog, which I think in that case... If you had to give the dog some sort of slight sedation, like something just that just makes them
chill
very
the dog
calm,
out.
If that was like a requirement, oh my God, let them come on board as long as you book them their own seat. Because I would love to see what percentage of the world are dog lovers versus dog haters, but surely there are not so many cold-hearted people in the world that it would be a majority of people who would dislike that concept. Allergies, of course, is a different thing.
Allergies is a consideration, of course.
Yeah, but there's so many things on flights that, you know, are, you know, people with allergies suffer with. There's gluten all over the place. There's nuts here and there. So that's not, you know, that's not a good argument for the dog thing specifically. But I do, you know, just like you, it would be the best flight. Imagine you board a Q-suite quad and the three other quads are occupied by dogs.
Oh my God, three Dobermans and me in a Q-suite quad. In a Q-suite quad. An absolute dream. A dream. So I have some stats on this while you were talking, okay? Because you said I would love to know. You know, it would depend on the dog loving v dog hating. So there is not currently a definitive global percentage of dog lovers v dog haters, right? But according to a Gallup poll, 44% of Americans own a dog, and the vast majority of non-dog owners express positive feelings towards dogs. In Europe, many European countries such as the UK, Germany, France, and large percentage... such as the UK, Germany, and France, a large percentage of people also own dogs, and those that don't express positive attitudes towards them. In the UK, 26% of all households own dogs, indicating widespread affection for pets. Japan, not as high as the West, as you can probably have expected. Japan still has, though, a significant pet dog population, 17% of households owning a dog. But many more people not owning, but definitely expressing positive views towards them. These stats fall off of a cliff in the Middle East and India, right? Mm. For example, in India, there's a lot of association in some areas that dogs are associated with the street dogs that are seen as nuisances or dangerous. So there's a kind of more negative attitude. China, I don't even know if we want to go down that rabbit hole with some of the issues there with dogs. But on the whole, to go back to our earlier point, yeah, I would...
you would love it.
I would love it, though I know that practically it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, given what you said, you would think on a transatlantic flight, that concept might work. But just to give some context for why I think Japan is lower and Korea, that would be the case as well. It's because so many people, I think, who love dogs just don't have space because the apartments are so small in Tokyo and Seoul that if people have a dog, it's usually a tiny dog. And if you see someone walking around town with a golden retriever or something like that, you know they are rich because it's a sign that you have a big enough apartment to share it with basically something the size of another human.
So
it's very interesting.
Interesting. Nicholas asks, hey, Alex, I'm loving the podcast with you and Line Cutter Dan.
No.
I am currently listening to your podcast on a Swiss business flight to Johannesburg. We have such swish listeners, don't we? Such bougie listeners.
Yeah.
So he's listening on a Swiss flight. He says, my question is, would you consider doing flight reviews like Dan from time to time? Thanks. Well, Nicholas, now that I know I have you as my first viewer, I think it's a great time to set up a rival channel. And you know what I think my first video is going to be? My first one. And if I just go back to who asked this question, it was the other one was Stephen. Stephen and Chris, we will get that first class A380 video out, but it's not going to be on the Nonstop Dan channel. It's going to be on the Nonstop Alex channel. It's a channel that is going to be the biggest, most beautiful, biggest YouTube channel in aviation, taking on the likes of the Swedish New Yorker who currently has the monopoly. So, yeah, well, that's my commitment.
I think a lot of people are like, yeah, I'd love to start a flight review channel. Like, I get messages all the time, obviously, from people being like, I'm starting a channel. But what you and what most people don't realize is that recording and reviewing a full flight is not as easy as it seems.
It's easy. What do you have to do? You have to script and then video and then hide your camera from hostile crew and then video again and then capture everything in the right light, capture everything in the right angle, then zoom out, zoom in, back up, transfer, edit, export, send.
Thank you.
Count me out.
You got it. All right. Next question.
I have the next question from, I think the name is pronounced Yelma, could be Jelma. Hopefully either version was right. Hi, Alex. Not sure if this is the right place to ask, but of course it is because I'm reading it. So well done. He says, I was wondering if you and Dan could talk about your favorite boarding music. Personally, I can listen to the Etihad music on repeat, and yet I rarely fly them. What makes boarding music so good? Is it only nostalgia or is it something else? Looking forward to the next episode, he says. What do you think? I know you are a big fan of airline boarding music in general.
Are you not?
Yeah, I am, but I think you're bigger. I think you are a bigger fan than me. Yeah.
Well, I think that it really comes down to the fact that you only listen to luxurious airlines boarding music. Like, although Norwegian had lovely boarding music before the pandemic, I think the reason that we listen to it is to bring back good memories. And unfortunately, listening to Norwegian's beautiful boarding music just doesn't quite bring back those nostalgic feelings of settling in. But yeah, when it comes to some of my favorites, gosh, ANA, I love. That makes me super nostalgic. Of course, Etihad's old one from the Nicole Kidman ad, Chef's Kiss. The new one is quite good, although I don't really listen to it. Oman Air's amazing. Of course, Qatar Airways. I will say they've made their music by Dana Al-Fradan in three pieces, which have been introduced throughout the years. They're all amazing. But You and Me, I remember 2018, us being head over heels about the Qatar Airways boarding music, the first of the three pieces from Dana Al-Fradan, right?
Yeah, definitely. I still listen to that today. I also love the Etihad music. I still
listen to that. The new or the old one? The one from Nicole Kidman era.
The Nicole Kidman era. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because now they have something that's a bit, to be honest, the Nicole Kidman one to me is like almost a bit spooky.
It is creepy. That's what I like. It reminds me of my night flight from Sydney to Abu Dhabi on the upper deck A380 for the first time. And like, will we take off before the Sydney curfew?
The mysteries of being on Etihad. Then Emirates, I think, is good. But the fact is like going viral on TikTok right now, I feel is a bit over the top, because there's many airlines that have better. Turkish Airlines, also beautiful boarding music. But as you can tell, it's mostly the Middle East. Singapore Airlines has nice boarding music, but to me, it's not as like just in the Middle East, they managed to make this magic that
you're right.
I think it's partly also, don't you think it's slight Orientalism on our part? Like when you're not from the Middle East and you listen to this music with like slight desert sounds, and it feels a bit like the instruments are kind of unfamiliar, and you're like, ooh, like this feels so exciting, and it feels like I'm going somewhere, you know, even though we're in the Middle East all the time, it just feels like, you know, there's something
reinforces the exotic.
It.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. Ryan is in touch. He says, hi, I love seeing the podcast do well. I never miss an episode. Thank you, Ryan. He says, my question is, I will be living in Nepal for the next 3 months and I want to see as much of the country as possible. However, as it's a very mountainous country, the roads are in terrible condition and it takes ages to get everywhere. Therefore, the best option is to fly, although I know Nepal has a poor air safety record. Thus, which airline would you recommend as the safest slash best? He says, FYI, I'm currently sitting writing this on board the Qatar Airways A380 bar, sipping a lemon and mint en route to Kathmandu via Doha from Heathrow.
Ooh.
Told you, our listeners are next level. That's amazing.
So bougie.
Right. What do we think? This is a great question.
Oh my God.
Difficult scenario to navigate.
As soon as I heard Nepal, I was like, no.
Buddha Air operates a slightly younger fleet than the others.
Yeah, they're definitely safe in a country where I personally don't know if I would be comfortable flying, because if you see an accident these days in 2023, 2024, the odds are unacceptably high that something has happened in Nepal, and it's tragic what we've seen last year and this year happen there. I had some friends who were like, we're going to Nepal, we're going to fly all over to take photos. I literally told them, please, I am begging you, there are so many stunning mountainous countries. If you're not going for Mount Everest, don't fly around, because it's such an unnecessary risk. And of course, flying there is still very safe compared to other modes of transport anywhere in the world. But just if there's any country where you want to avoid flying domestically as much as you can, unfortunately, it's Nepal.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, definitely avoid and stay away from Yeti Airlines. I mean, even Nepal Airlines itself are banned from EU airspace. But mind you, so is every other airline in Nepal. So it's difficult, and I wouldn't want to give, you know, definitive answer to that, because there isn't. This is unfortunately a country with an increasingly poor safety record that I hope they can get the right help that they need to rectify that. But it is something that's been going on for years.
Yes. So anyway, have an amazing time in Nepal. Sounds horrible to say this after this, but yeah, I've heard people love to visit. Obviously stunning nature. Just please be you know, careful about
make good the choices. Book.
Yeah.
Make good choices. Slightly lighter note. Hani has asked, can we discuss the direction at which Dan eats his sandwiches? And he sent me screenshots of Dan eating a sandwich on a Virgin Atlantic flight, which is his recent upload on YouTube. What's the story here?
I love how you said that.
Why are they DMing me about it?
So first of all, I got... yeah, it's so true. First of all, I got so many comments about this. And what I tried to explain to people is that, first of all, that is not how I normally eat sandwiches. Second of all, I was trying to just eat the vegetables that were sticking out of the sandwich because there were only fillings in the middle. And I didn't want just all the plain bread on the top or bottom of the sandwich. So I was thinking, let me just take a few bites here in the center to get the contents mainly. But I realized it came across looking very serial killer vibes. So I apologize about that.
Yeah, well, okay. I guess that answered that. I need to go back and watch how you...
I'm going to make an apology video now.
Yeah, that you know what? That's, I think that's what we need, actually. I think we need an apology video. Yeah. let's move on. Let's go to some of the scenarios that people sent in about, am I being an a-hole, right? So this one says, he wants to stay anonymous. He says, hi, I was dreading a long-haul flight in economy, so I decided to book two seats, one for myself and one next to me. You are able to do this on many airlines, and so I had two boarding passes, one for me and one for the extra space. The passenger names were my name, and there was a note in the booking that it was an extra seat for me. For what it's worth, this was a two seats in a 2-3-2 configuration.
Seven, I felt six, it was seven. Worth it.
Yeah, I guess. Unless it was the rear of something. Yeah. I felt it was worth the cost for my comfort. Once on board, a woman with a baby asked if she could sit in the empty aisle seat next to me. I said no, explaining that I had paid for the extra seat for my own comfort. And she said, and I told her that she should ask the flight attendants for help finding another seat instead. Am I the asshole? He says.
Oh, this made me cringe because of how uncomfortable that whole situation must have been. Oh. I mean,
well,
no, you're
is
not
he the
asshole.
Or not?
No, not at all. You paid for it.
No.
So
yeah.
It just sucks that it happened to be a mother with a kid. But yeah, it's your seat. You got to do what you got to do at the end of the day.
Yep. We declare you as not an a-hole. Congratulations. Yeah. We'll move on to the next scenario. Jonathan has written in. He says, hey guys, I love the podcast. Here is my am I the a-hole scenario. On a long-haul flight on an A321neo, a single aisle aircraft, the lavatories in economy at the rear were busy and the trolley was 3/4 of the way down the aisle on the way to the lavs, adding yet another hurdle. My daughter needed to go. And as any parent will tell you, when a 7-year-old needs to go, she needs to go. So, seeing the green vacant light on the forward business class lavatory on, I walked up to the business class cabin with my daughter and instructed her to use the lavatory there instead. While waiting outside for my daughter, a flight attendant opened the curtain and started ranting that the lavatories were designated for cabin classes and asked me to never do this again. I shrugged it off, feeling like it wasn't a big deal, since A, the lavatory was empty when I used it, and B, everyone was asleep in business class, and my daughter simply could not wait for the crew to finish their trolley service in the aisle blocking the rear lavs. Guys, am I the a-hole?
Alex, you take this.
Why are you throwing it to me?
Because I don't want to comment.
You have to comment. He's asking both of us.
Okay, you go
you have
first.
To ask. Right. Okay. So I am torn, right? Okay. Yeah. So, as to whether or not you are an a-hole, because on one side, I massively respect the fact that your daughter needed to go, and she needs to go. And you, as you described in detail, the trolley was blocking the aisle. The lavs were occupied anyway. You can see that the lavs are empty in front of you. There's nothing there to block you. And all you're thinking of in that moment is your daughter. right? So that doesn't make you an a-hole. You have her comfort and interests at heart first, and you're thinking about her, and travel is difficult sometimes for kids anyway, not least on a single aisle jet. So on that side, I think, yeah, I of course understand why you did that. Okay, that's that, right? The other side to it is, of course, you can't go into business class and use the bathrooms on almost every airline under the sun, because
well, besides in the US.
Oh, besides in the US, right? Because, well, maybe he was in the US.
Well, that, well, then the crew wouldn't have told him.
Then the crew wouldn't have said it, true. Yeah. Okay, right. So, because ultimately, most airlines are very strict about the lavs being designated for those in that cabin class. And the people that are paying to fly in that cabin class are paying for perks like having a bathroom that is available only to that cabin. At the same time, I go back to the exception. You said everyone was asleep. There was nobody there. The light was green. You were with a kid. So it was for your kid. It wasn't for you. I mean, as far as your story and anecdote goes, you didn't even go. It was just the, just your daughter. So I think, even though I would never advocate for such rule breaking, I think you are not the a-hole.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, I think regardless of whether this was right or wrong, you are not an a-hole at all for trying to help your child. So I think
that's a fact. The answer that's a given.
Very
that's
clear.
A given.
You are not the a-hole. But, is this something that should be done? I think in your, like, when I heard this, I'm like, good for you. You do that. But you have to be able to universalize every act. So if you then say every parent with a child who sees the lavatory is open in business can go use it, I don't think that, you know, is something we would recommend. So it's tough because, of course, you know, if you're in that situation, you take the opportunity. I can't blame you for it. But I also think that we shouldn't encourage it just because there needs to be, you know, some level of respecting the rules, even when it comes to kids. And if you were to say, let's say you're in business class, then would you go to the first class lavatory, like on Emirates with the first class showers, just because you couldn't reach the back? You know, it's just, I think, yeah, you obviously wouldn't. Yeah, so it is a slippery
slope.
Yeah,
you wouldn't though. You wouldn't.
Great, great scenario though.
Yeah, I've got another am I the a-hole scenario. She says, this is from Amelia. She says, this was my second 8-hour flight on my way home from Addis via Dubai. I'd booked an aisle seat so I could get up without bothering anyone else. And I also had a special meal designated to my aisle seat. When I boarded the aircraft, I found my seat and settled in for the long flight. In fact, I had my eye shades on prior to even becoming airborne. A family gets on with three kids. They don't speak much English and ask me by tapping me on the shoulder if I could switch seats with one of their kids so that they could sit together. The father of the family wasn't sat anywhere near the mother and kids, so it looked to me like they had left their seats to a random assignment. I initially said yes to swapping, thinking it was just to move to the aisle seat adjacent, for example, or the one behind. But then I quickly realized they wanted me to sit in a middle seat at the rear of the cabin, to which I said no and returned to my seat. He then started to loudly criticize me, saying that he hopes I understand that I'm splitting up a family, how difficult it is traveling with kids, and he attracts the attention of the crew who tried to settle things because it's now holding up boarding. Guys, I don't think I was in the wrong here at all. I organized everything beforehand. I pre-booked and prepaid for my seat, and I had to deal with this random guy criticizing me to half of the cabin for not wanting to swap to a middle seat for an 8-hour flight. Am I being unreasonable? Am I the asshole? Oh
my God, it's always kids and families in this situation,
yeah.
But you're absolutely not the a-hole. This is 100%, you're right. This is, to me, the clearest of all the situations where it's just like, I wouldn't even feel bad. If I'm going to switch, it needs to be an equivalent seat. Otherwise, don't even ask, you know?
No, I feel this is clear as day. Absolutely. Yeah, there is no suggestion of any wrongdoing whatsoever. You know, And by the way, Dan, we received many of these scenarios that we're not going to read them all out because they were all about seat assignments and whether or not they were the a-hole for declining to swap. That was the common theme. Tons.
You're never
because,
an a-hole
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, exactly. We've discussed this at length on the podcast. So yeah, that's good. Another one here. This is from Adam. He says, am I the asshole for not letting my 6'7" brother have the free first class upgrade when the airline gave me one on a 12-hour flight and the rest of my family stood to wonder if I was going to let them travel instead of me? I argued that it was my upgrade given by the airline and I fly the most and have the most status. Therefore, I wanted the rest. My 6'7" brother didn't talk to me for the next 2 days. I've got to ask you, I mean, you are the tall man in Europe.
Oh, well, yeah, of course you're not an asshole for that. You got the upgrade. I would say, you know, if that was your boyfriend instead, perhaps if you wanted to be nice, then of course it would be a nice gesture to give it. But for a family member or something, they're stuck with you anyway. So what the hell? Just take the upgrade and be happy about it.
Take the upgrade and run.
You know, someone who is 6'7", unfortunately, we've spoken about this before. You gotta, you know, take your leg room into your own hands and deal with that to make sure that wherever you're sitting, you're gonna have enough leg room because, you know, I hate
you
to
are
say
responsible.
It, but if you're tall, you can't just board in, you know, the 30th row of a Lufthansa A320neo where there's 28 inches of pitch and then complain. You gotta just pay up for the emergency exit or whatever it is. Because, you know, some different people have different things they got to pay up for in life. And tall people have been given that card. So we can't rely on anyone else to do it for us.
Well, there you go. The tall man has spoken, ladies and gentlemen. And with that, we will wrap up today's podcast. He's very tall. Very, very tall, by the way. You'll
Not
see
at
if
all.
You ever
oh my God.
Run into him. When he's, I don't know, dashing through Singapore Changi with his friend April Lin and
You know, it's funny. We'll just the other day, Oscar reminded me of the lovely listener at the Travel Summit in Toronto in April, who was still the only person I have ever run into. Because he listens to the podcast, he went, oh, wow, you're so much shorter than I expected, because he was in on the joke. But I remember that to this day because everyone's like, wow, you're so tall. But I'm not even that tall. So there you go.
I'm offended by the accent you just did on behalf of American women. American women who will decide this election and go to the polls in just a matter of days.
Oh, my God. Iwillvote.com. If you haven't already, please vote.
We can't. Only you can. You're the American here.
We literally can't. I mean, of course, our American listeners are all going to vote because they're smart people. But yeah, please, you know,
The rest of us
are just
going to grab a bowl of popcorn, do an all-nighter, and see if we will have a return of Donald J. Trump or a promotion for Vice President Kamala Harris.
You know,
I mean,
luckily, there's one more episode before the election, but I actually feel like on the morning after the election, given the time zones we're in, I'm going to feel sick when I wake up. Like, can you imagine just that moment when we go on our phones and
stay awake all night on election nights.
Are you
There's
joking?
There's no way I can just... Well, I can't just wake up and see how the world has changed by, like, late and everyone else knew before me.
But
I
so
will
if,
be doing an all-nighter
for sure.
If you're
in Doha, that means that 8 p.m. Actually, midnight in the U.S. is 8 a.m. Midnight East Coast is 8 a.m. Doha time. How could you possibly survive that all-nighter?
Well, actually, that's a good point. So...
It's best to get up at 6 a.m.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. With the US election, I'll do that. With the UK one, I did the all-nighter because that was easier here. Okay, yeah. So actually, I don't need to do an all-nighter. Okay, that's good.
Anyway,
I'm just going to wake up early like I do.
Yeah, we have next week to talk about this, but scary times. Okay. Thanks for joining us today on air, everyone.
We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Percent of the work week is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.